Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hey, everybody. This is Casey Johnson. I got a special treat for you. On this week's episode of the Bulls Talk podcast, you will get to hear the Sports Uncovered episode on Michael Jordan's two-word facts, I'm back, in its entirety. You're going to hear how Michael Jordan's decision to return to basketball impacted not only the NBA, but the world, and hear firsthand accounts from people that were there, like Steve Kerr and Horace Grant, and from people who were impacted by the decision, like LeBron James. Here's what I need you to do. Search Sports Uncovered wherever you are listening to this podcast to get future episodes of Sports Uncovered automatically downloaded to your device for free. Without further ado, here's Mike Tirico introducing Sports Uncovered. I'm back.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
Michael Jordan shocked the sports world with his stunning retirement in the fall of 1993. The face of basketball choosing baseball diamonds over NBA rings. Just 18 months later, a two-word fax changed everything. I'm back. But before MJ sent his now famous fax, he tested his game in a series of closed-door practices that weren't with his Bulls teammates. They weren't even in Chicago. Michael Jordan suited up and wore number 23 for the Golden State Warriors. I'm Mike Tirico, and this is Sports Uncovered. I'm back.
This is a Channel 5 News special report.
Good morning. I'm Warner Saunders.
And I'm Allison Rosati. What a shocker. In a matter of moments, Michael Jordan is expected to officially announce his retirement.
Michael Jordan's retirement in 1993 stunned the sports world. I mean, who ups and leaves at the very top of the mountain?
I'm very solid with my decision of not to play the game of basketball in the NBA. Reason being, I've heard a lot of different speculations about my reasons for not playing. But I've always stressed to people that have known me and the media that has followed me that when I lose the sense of motivation and the sense of to prove something as a basketball player, it's time for me to move away from the game of basketball.
No one was prepared for it, not even his teammates. Tony Kukoc was one of the first European players to come stateside to play in the NBA, and he was starting his NBA career that summer and was excited to fulfill a dream of playing with Michael Jordan.
It was just the media frenzy in front of the Berta Center, and once I got in, they told me that Michael is retiring that day, that everything kind of, I don't want to say breaking apart, my dreams are actually breaking apart. But I came with the idea to play with the best player, to get a chance to win a championship and everything else. And basically that first day, everything is sinking pretty low for me. I joked many times about that day. Once I got home, I actually told my wife to not unpack, that I'm thinking we're going to go back.
Kukoc wasn't the only Bulls player shocked by the retirement. Horace Grant, who was with Jordan during the first three championships, he couldn't believe it himself.
When you first hear something like that, you think it's a prank, you know, just coming off your third championship. But then reality, I mean, the press conference and the reality set in, it was like, wow.
The city didn't know what to do, and the media didn't have any concrete answers either.
It shook the city of Chicago and the entire NBA nation. It really did. And, you know,
It was all about the NBA on NBC then. It was a major production. It was it. Jordan made the league. There were a lot of great superstars along with him, obviously. But Jordan was it.
That's longtime local sports broadcaster Mark Jean Greco. He covered the team in the 90s.
It was surreal. And I remember, as part of the media, we're all sitting around kind of nervous. Like, okay, what's going to happen now? If he's not in the league, what are we going to do?
Mark Silverman, co-host of the Waddle and Sylvie show on ESPN 1000 in Chicago, was just getting his start on the Bulls beat. He was watching a White Sox ALCS game on television. Michael Jordan was coincidentally throwing out the first pitch when the news leaked that Michael was retiring.
Well, I mean, it's before Twitter, so like we got no heads up. And I'm sitting in Northwest Iowa, my first job, and I'm getting ready to watch White Sox Blue Jays. And this game was supposed to be so big. I mean, that was the Joe Carter Blue Jays. That was a really good White Sox team. And Jordan's, I think, throwing out the first pitch. And instead of it being the start of something great for the White Sox, it was the end of the best thing ever with the Chicago Bulls at that time. So one of Jerry's teams ready to step into the postseason. The other one of Jerry's teams is basically just hitting a wall because Michael's leaving. And it was absolutely crazy. Like, what was going on through my mind? This is a guy still in the prime of his career. This is a guy who can still dominate. This is a guy who, you know, they just won in Phoenix and they can win more. And now all of a sudden he's walking away. And I just remember tuning into Chicago television stations and everyone's like chasing him and no one truly got a real good answer.
Speaking of media, Ahmad Rashad was NBC's lead reporter during the NBA on NBC days. He befriended Jordan early in his career and gave his take on MJ's stunning decision.
I always thought that it was that he was tired and more than tired. He was completely exhausted from giving it everything he had, every single minute, every single day, you know, even in practice and in games. And then it was just a, you know, it was a rough road. And anybody that's sort of played professional sports realize how hard it is to get to the top. It is twice as hard to stay there, you know. And then if you keep moving on, it's three times as hard. And the commitment becomes overwhelming. And I don't know how long you could just do that.
Rod Higgins is the vice president of basketball operations for the Atlanta Hawks, longtime friend of Jordan and key to this story. But more on that a little bit later. Higgins tried to understand where Jordan was coming from.
You know, the thing that he did was he won at such a high level. It probably was a drain on him after a while. I think just internalized a lot of how he was going to go forward. Deep down, I always thought he would come back to play because he was just so young and so dynamic. And it was just probably the break he needed to get re-energized.
At the time of Jordan's retirement, the NBA was at a pinnacle it had never reached before. Jordan helped make the game global, more international. The league was losing its brightest star when he seemingly was at his brightest. Brian McIntyre was the senior VP of basketball communications for the NBA when Michael retired. He describes what that day was like.
It was kind of depressing. And I had been with him weeks before at the last game of the finals. And had talked to him there, and I didn't think, you know, no one knew that he was going to do this. You know, in retrospect, you look back and, you know, the way, it wasn't the media's finest hour, in my opinion. And I'm a big defender of the media, but there was a number of people who tried to put Michael's interest in gambling with his father's death. And I thought that was incredibly irresponsible and off the wall. I remember having conversations with a number of sports editors around the country, and to a person they agreed that it was, that the people who wrote about it went too far too fast and didn't have facts. You're used to it today. There's too much of that. It wasn't a happy day for the NBA. You're losing your star player. I mean, we had a lot of great players, but he was Michael Jordan. And it wasn't quite the same.
After leaving the NBA, Michael went back to his first love, baseball.
Well, I got this whole idea from Bo, from Dion, you know, the guys who made that transition to play two sports. And I'm saying, well, you know, I always wanted to play baseball, and I kicked myself for not playing in college when I had the opportunity to play in college. I was just hoping I'd get that opportunity again, and I have. So they gave me the motivation to at least try it.
Hopefully the players that know me and understand what I'm doing, it's not just I'm coming out here and trying to do this. I mean, I'm out working hard and doing what I have to do necessarily to make this team. And hopefully they can judge me on that. Naturally, because of the press, it's a tendency to have some jealousies there. Hopefully people can judge me on my work ethics and what I'm doing on the baseball field and not what you guys have opinions of what I'm capable of doing or what I'm not capable of doing.
Michael's longtime trainer was Tim Grover. Tim firmly believes after working with Michael to prep him for baseball that Jordan was fully committed to playing.
If the baseball strike had not happened, I don't know if this thing would have, if this would have materialized. It might have materialized later, but if that baseball strike was not, he was all in. The work ethic he was putting in and the time he was putting in the baseball, in the batting cage, in the batting cages, on the field, all this other, I mean, the amount of blisters that he had on his hands from constantly hitting and throwing and all this other stuff. I mean, the amount of stuff, the work that we had to do, the tape, just to kind of heal those hands up so he could go back in and hit the thing. You know, the first one in the batting cages, the last one to leave, always on the field. He was determined to, like, I can do this.
Grover had company in that thought. Here again is Ahmad Rashad.
I think what people have to understand, he didn't retire to do nothing. He retired to play baseball. And if there had not been a strike, he would have still been playing baseball. But I think the fact that baseball became not an option, then the option to go back and play again became, you know, a real one.
Grover and Rashad may have been right, but Major League Baseball locked his doors, so Jordan removed himself completely from baseball.
Michael Jordan was pegged for the Chicago White Sox Double-A club in Nashville, but he refused to challenge the baseball union, and Jordan left camp last week.
When he was asked to cross the picket line, they literally asked him, and he was like, that's it.
This left the most competitive person, possibly in human history, unable to compete. So we thought.
The reason why I'm smiling, I might get in trouble for this. Him and Rod Higgins are really, really good friends. He came and practiced with us two or three times in Oakland.
Pause. That's Tim Hardaway. By 1994, he was already a three-time NBA All-Star and a star in the NBA. Remember when I said Rod Higgins is the key to this story? Well, Tim Hardaway is the door.
And we knew he was coming back then.
So here's the story. Before the facts, before the practices at the Birdo Center with the Bulls, Michael actually practiced with the Golden State Warriors. And to our knowledge, there have been small accounts, but what you're about to hear hasn't been detailed in 25 years. In 1994, Rod Higgins was an assistant coach with the Warriors under Don Nelson. Hall of Famer Chris Mullin was hurt, but was rehabbing. And Tim Hardaway was the young star. They recount those practices. Beginning with Rod Higgins.
I think it was 1994. Michael came out to California to visit, which he would often do. You know, he would come out to California a lot. And, you know, he would come to visit, whether it was in the Bay Area. He would come out to the West Coast quite often. And so this particular time after he had been retired now for a while, I guess, it was football season. The 49ers were in season. Richard Dent, if I can recall this correctly, I think was a 49er at the time who happens to also be a close friend of Michael. So Michael comes out to the Bay Area and visits for a few days and just enjoying Northern California. So one morning while Michael was visiting, he calls and asks me, it was early in the morning, I was on my way because I was an assistant coach for Don Nelson. I was on my way to practice and he called and said, do you think it's okay if I practice with you guys? And then I said, I don't think so, but let me call Nelly. That's what we call Don Nelson. Let me call Nelly and I'll get back to you. I call Nelly and ask Nelly if, you know, if it's okay, you know, if there's going to be any issues. Michael wants to know if he could practice with us. Nelly's response was, hell yeah. So, you know, I said, Michael, sure, come on over. So we came in, he came in, and we dressed him out. Eric Housen dressed him out in Warrior gear. He might have gave him a number 23, if I'm not. I don't think anybody was wearing 23 at that time, but... You know, gave him his wristband to put on his elbow and things of that nature. And then we warm up, do some 3-on-2, 2-on-1 to get warmed up. And Nelly said, okay, let's go ahead and scrimmage.
Hall of Famer Chris Mullin.
Michael was very good friends with Rod Higgins. And he was out playing golf, I think, up in Napa. And I was injured at the time. So I do remember Michael coming down to practice. And we happened to take the same size. You know, we're basically the same size, same sneaker size. And so he was out kind of, you know, I think we had Tim Hardaway and maybe Latrell Sprewell at that point in time. And they might have been popping off a little bit. And Michael said, Mully, go, let's go. Give me your gear.
Five-time All-Star Tim Hardaway.
He came in and he ramped up the practice. And we had closed-door practice in the Coliseum. And we knew he was coming back then. He just took over our practice. Just took over our practice. He got, you know, the five guys that wasn't playing that much. And he said, I take this five, you all have, or I take us seven to play you all seven in a scrimmage. And it was like he never left.
Here's Rod again.
The things that I remember was MJ really wanted to play against Hardaway and Sprewell, because Sprewell was like the new it, so to speak, in terms of the two guards.
Stop. I gave you Hardaway's credentials, but let me sum up Sprewell. Latrell had already been an all-star, started from his second season, and had the build of a rising star in the NBA. A Jordan prototype, if you will. See, at that time in the NBA, everyone was looking for the next Michael Jordan, or their version of him. And Spree was a long shot candidate to be that. Anyway, back to Rod.
Michael's guys won. Michael made sure he had Chris Mullin on his team, who was, I think Chris was even rehabbing, so he wasn't even active at that point. Mully played with Michael. They had their little dream team handshake going on, whatever they had going on. And then I know Ronnie Cicely was on Mully and MJ's team. And then Sprewell and Hardaway played together with other players, which I don't know how those groups fared out, but once Michael got warmed up, you could tell his objective was to basically kick Spree and Tim's behind and talk trash to him.
Chris Mullin.
What I remember is him walking on the court after not playing, probably played 36 holes of golf the day before and dominated. That's what I remember. Well, I was fortunate enough to have seen that up close and personal for several years on both ends of it, as a teammate in some instances and as an opponent. Much more pleasant being a teammate than an opponent to Michael Jordan. Yeah, but he wanted to go out the best, youngest player who thought he was better than him. And he put that to rest that day for sure.
Higgins went on to speak about what it showed their then young budding star, Latrell Sprewell.
I mean, I think it showed Latrell what greatness is in terms of a guy who's been hitting the golf ball, traveling the world, and then he comes in out of shape and he gives it to you because he knew how to play. You know, I think I heard BJ Armstrong had a good, I think he had mentioned somewhere in the media where Michael wanted to gauge the new it. So when he probably, Michael was thinking, when I come back, I want to see how I fare up against at least this guy, because I know I can practice against him. I go to the, you know, he came to the Bay and he basically measured Spree up. Did Spree learn something? I'm sure he did learn something. If you're playing against, you know, one of the greatest to ever play, I would hope he learned a little bit. He probably knew he could do it, and he probably wanted to deliver a message to Tim and Spree. Like, you guys, you know, you have all this talent, but Tim and Spree couldn't coexist at that point in time. They were, you know, still young, and they were still trying to develop who they were as individual all-star caliber basketball players. And so it was a good opportunity for Michael to trash talk him, you know, and beat him. And then after practice, sit down and trash talk him some more and saying, this is why I beat you. I mean, that's the way it goes.
Here's Tim Hardaway.
How graceful he was, shooting step back jump shots, faking, dunking on people. He made that team that wasn't playing a lot show the coach that they should be playing. So, yeah, we knew he was coming back. I knew at that particular time, I knew he was coming back then.
And that was before
he announced that he was coming back.
And before he was doing practice with the Bulls.
Before he was doing practice with the Bulls. He came down to Oakland, stayed with Rod Higgins at his house. He came in and he practiced with us for about two or three practices.
Here's what Chris Mullin took from it.
Yeah, I mean, I always thought he was coming back. But a day like that, when you saw, you know, when you saw Michael walking around, say playing golf, or just, he was just so fit, right? So it wasn't a physical thing, but seeing him on the basketball court and playing against, you know, Spiro's a really good player, and he was in mid-season form. So for him to do that, I thought at that point in time, it was just a matter of time.
Hold on. So from their account, it seems like Jordan still had something to prove. I mean, to himself. I mean, Jordan didn't have to prove anything to anybody. We asked Jordan's old trainer, Tim Grover, did he know about these secret practices? And he told us he didn't. But what he did know was Michael Jordan and why Michael would do this.
My take on this, Latrell was one of the more explosive, more athletic, and he was one of the probably the better players during that short run that he had. So what Michael needed to know is, even I took the time off, can I still come back and kick his ass and kick this person's ass? And in his mind, he's just like, man, I've been gone from this game for how long? And he's supposed to be the top player. All right. And so he wasn't testing himself against Sprewell. He was testing himself against himself. He's not going there to say, okay, I need to see how much better or how good I am against Latrell Sprewell. It's, do I have confirmation of what I'm capable of doing? And I guarantee it, after he stepped on the court and he made one move, it automatically just like, okay, I got it.
Here's Rod Higgins putting a bow on those Golden State practices.
I don't think he ever said it, but I always felt that because he had too much game. He had too much left that he could accomplish on the basketball court. I remember watching him as a baseball player. It was like he was buying time to figure out what he's going to do again in the basketball world without, you know, me from an observant standpoint knowing it, because he kept everything kind of to his vest. And but you know, I just always felt he would definitely come back as a basketball player. He was just too darn good. That's what I recall. We had a good few days, and we played, I want to say after we practiced that day and he scrimmaged, we played the next day and we ended up losing that game. And Michael was just part of, like he was a warrior for 48 hours.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
After proving to himself, and the Warriors for that matter, he still could dominate, Jordan began practicing more with the Bulls. Then, teammate Steve Kerr started to wonder.
What's he doing? Is he coming back? Is he not? Is he gauging his interest? And again, we didn't really know. Some of the veteran guys, like B.J. Armstrong, you know, knew him pretty well. The new guys, like me, we didn't know him at all. So we would ask B.J., the older guys, Will Perdue, you know, what do you think? And it was just kind of speculation.
Michael's more frequent occurrences at the Birdo didn't go unnoticed. The media started to pick up on it as well. Here's Mark Jean Greco and Mark Silverman again.
Here's what it got to be. Who could get there the earliest and camp out all day long? And so I get there every day as early as I could. And they had this like little toll booth thing set up. Well, then all of a sudden, there's two security checkpoints. And then there's more security guys around. And then there are more cars in the parking lot. And, you know, Jordan had 500 cars, so you never knew which was which. And everybody had tinted windows and everything else. And so I remember finally, after learning that, I mean, this was common knowledge. Everybody kind of got the same information at the same time. He's inviting NBA players to secret workouts. He's showing up at the Birdo Center to just say hi. And then all of a sudden, he's there back-to-back days and everything else. Nobody's talking. You know, B.J. Armstrong, he had that little smirk. And he's like, I don't know anything. And Luke Longley's like, I don't know. And then Pete Myers goes, well, he's been here 2 days in a row. I guess he's coming back. He just kind of blurted it out. Everybody goes nuts. So I remember the one day I catch him going in the back door, Michael. And I'm running up with my crew, and then there's some other reporters follow suit, and we're all running up there. And I'm, Michael. And he just closes the door on my mic. It's just like, pfft. And so it really was humiliating a lot of times when you have to chase these guys. I mean, you know. It's just like, God, I got to chase these guys through the parking lot. This is my job. But that's what you have to do. So another day, we catch him coming out, and he's got to go through this little thing. And I'm like, Michael. He rolls down the window, and I stick my mic in there, and he goes, hey, what's up? And I go, and I start, and he goes, watch yourself. And he puts the window up. That's it. So he loved playing with us.
You go to the Birdo Center, and it's like a stakeout. You have every news crew from in town. You had sports crews, you had the news crews, you had national news crews, and everybody's waiting at the Birdo Center where there are gates. So you can only stand on one side of the gate. So we've got 40 people standing on this island where they basically scan their ID, and you see one black Range Rover after another pull up. And we're like, this one's Michael. And it wasn't. It's B.J. Armstrong, and he rolls down his window, and we're like, B.J., do you know anything? He's like, don't know anything yet, fellas, sorry. Then all of a sudden, another black Range Rover comes, and it's Larry Krystowiak. Hey, Larry, do you know anything? And you're asking Wennington and Krystowiak and B.J. and everybody and Scotty, and everybody's tight-lipped. He had been there the previous few days, and we're thinking today's the day. And we go, and we're getting ready to go in, and Tim Hallam, I'll never forget, walks out and says, guys, nothing to see here today. Michael's not here. And we all basically cover the rest of the day and leave. But then the next day, same drill, 50 camera crews now instead of the 40 from before.
Tony Kukoc seems like he knew what was coming.
Everybody kind of, we're talking about, maybe he's back, maybe he's not, we don't know, but it looks like he might be back. And it was time to go practice, and once I went to the locker room and I saw about 40, 50 pairs of Jordans at his locker, I said to myself, there's no way he's just going to practice one practice with the 50 pairs of shoes here being ready.
On March 18th, 1995, after weeks of practicing and training, Michael was prepared to make the step that was simply unprecedented. it was time to tell the world he was back. David Falk was Jordan's agent. He remembers what went into creating the now famous facts.
This is one of my jobs, is to help him craft a statement. So I took out a pad of paper. I consider myself a good writer. And I wrote like 5 or 6 different versions, maybe 6, 7 paragraphs a piece. He read them all. He didn't like any of them. And I wasn't offended. I mean, Michael is very good at expressing himself. He's an extremely articulate man. And finally he says, give me that paper. He takes the, I'm waiting to see if, you know, it'll take like 10, 15 minutes. He's gonna put something together based on the different paragraphs. So he just takes out the pen and writes, I'm back. And it was majestic in his simplicity. You know, I mean, there are certain times you don't have to explain it. I mean, everyone knew he had the itch to play. It was something he was great at, something he loved. I mean, there aren't a lot of players today in the NBA that love to play basketball. It's a great living for some, you know. I think the great ones, the greatest ones, all have that passion, for it. I mean, Michael had it, Magic, Bird, Olajuwon, Patrick Ewing. I think LeBron has it, Kobe. That's what makes them great. They have that passion. And so Michael just loved the game. And he didn't have to explain to people, like, you know, based on the strike, I've decided to come back or I missed it. Just people just were thrilled that he was back. It re-energized the game. I think people really missed him when he was gone. And of course, the inevitable questions were like, what's it going to be like when he comes back?
Well, Tom, as you know, the world has been informed. The NBA has been warned. And yes, Michael Jordan is truly back.
Then I called our PR director, Allison Sadovsky in Washington. And I said, Allison, you ready? We have a press release we have to get out like in the next 15 minutes. She goes, you know, do you want to dictate it to me? I said, sure, I'm back. And there's probably more verbiage, like where the press release came from than there was what it says. That the following statement was released today, whatever. You know, it's sort of a little formal. I consider myself a pretty good writer, and Michael has always been extremely respectful of my advice. But it was so touching. He just, it's like maybe tasting a food or tasting a wine and you don't have it quite right. And it wasn't like he would say, oh, that's terrible. He just didn't feel comfortable. He said, give me that pen. I was watching, like, I said, okay, big time. Let's see what you got. And when he came out with that, wow. We all knew it just the minute the pen finished writing the last K. It was amazing.
Is it the most impactful fax ever?
No question. It's the shortest, I'd say, per word. You're paying by the word. It was a brilliant. If you went to Burstyn Marsteller, we had a relationship with John Lesage, who's the president of Burstyn in Chicago, and we used him from time to time, like as a crisis manager. He was a really good friend. And if I'd gone to John and said, give me some ideas what would be appropriate to say for Mike, there's not a PR agency in the country that would have written something as elegant as what Michael wrote.
The league couldn't contain their excitement. Here's former VP of Communications for the NBA, Brian McIntyre.
Just two words, I'm back. And it was different, but it was almost a precursor of Twitter. You know, it just put it out there. That's all you need to know. And the sense of happiness around the league, I think, was just fans, the sports talk radio, which was just getting going, and it was just all over the place. And it was a good feeling.
Jordan's two-word facts sent shockwaves around the world. The king was ready to take back his throne. Mark Jean Greco recalls that powerful moment.
That's the most impactful two words ever. And nobody ever did it that way. And faxing was the email of the time, so... yeah, and it was just like Michael, too. It was just like him. That's the most impactful facts of all time.
Once the announcement was made, players took notice. Here's Steve Kerr.
Well, I'm just fascinated with the logistics of the facts. I mean, how many numbers did he have to send it to? How does that work? It's a long time ago. But, no, it was... for us, it was just exciting. It was thrilling, you know. When we heard he was coming back and it was official, all of a sudden, you know, everything changed. Our horizons changed. Our possibilities changed. And just the excitement of, you know, playing with the greatest player ever especially near the end of what had been a kind of a forgettable season. It was just an incredible feeling of energy and excitement.
Here's former teammate Horace Grant.
Historic, man. For someone like that who left the game in his prime to come back with one of the greatest organization, meaning the Bulls, was great for the league. He had to come back because Scottie kept begging him, you know, holding up his shoes, like talking about come back, you know, with the shoes. So, but you know, it was great. It was fantastic. Yeah.
Players around the league were paying attention too. Here's Tim Hardaway again.
That was probably our social media right there. I'm back on the facts. You know, I guess that was the way to get the word out to everybody without calling anybody or texting anybody. And, you know, I think that he didn't want to go on TV. He didn't want to try to, upshow or show up, you know, the league or anything like that. Acquired facts. I'm back. I'm playing this weekend. And that's it. That's all. And that's enough to be said. And that's the way Michael Jordan is. When he said, I'm back, everything just skyrocketed. The stock market skyrocketed. Just everything, all the businesses skyrocketed. The United Center started getting their sales back, and everybody started buying tickets. And then across the league, they looking at the remaining of the games, where he's going to be at, where he's going to play at. They sold out immediately. So the league was happy about that. The league was very happy about that. And I think and the players was happy about it too, because they, you know, the world's greatest basketball player, you always want to go against the best, and he was the best.
Tony Kukoc finally got sense of what the difference was between the Bulls with and without Michael Jordan.
From that point on, it was like the Bulls were this American team that everybody wants to see, everybody wants to talk to. I felt we had fans literally in every single arena we played, and our fans were dominating. And it didn't matter if we played in New York or LA or Miami or anywhere else, it was just plenty of Bulls fans.
Former NBA player Glenn Rice was a rising star at that time as well, and he remembers what it felt like when Jordan announced.
Yeah, this wasn't like being at the movies watching Arnold Schwarzenegger. I think when Michael said, I'm back, we all started reliving the nightmares that we had when he was in the game and how relaxed we were when he was out. But for him to come back to the game at the time he did was an awesome event. And, you know, that's Michael Jordan, man. We all love him.
Jordan's return sent ripple effects throughout the league, impacting everyone, including NBA legends like Dominique Wilkins.
Everybody knew he was coming back. He was coming back. Michael was competitive. We knew he wasn't going to stay in the baseball. He was coming back in the NBA, and he came back with a vengeance, you know. But how could you? I mean, I don't know any person who could do that the way he did it.
One player who was directly impacted by Jordan retiring was Robert Horry. He won back-to-back championships with the Houston Rockets in 1994 and 1995, the year Jordan was out and the season Jordan made his return, which leads to much debate about if Jordan never left. But Horry remembers when Jordan announced his return.
I just remember Scottie pointing at his shoes. That's the thing that always sticks in my mind. And I think about, you know, the joy Horace had in beating Michael Jordan when he was with the Orlando Magic, and then the sorrow he had by getting beat by us with the Rockets getting swept. So, you know, it was a lot of memories because it was bad, and it was good all the same that, you know, that Michael came back and got beat, because that started his run for, you know, for three more. So it was a fantastic thing to have a guy that's so iconic back in the game, because you always want to measure yourself with the great ones, and to be able to play against a guy like him, to try to measure yourself and see what you had to work on was wonderful.
Another player affected by Jordan returning was a 10-year-old LeBron James.
It was a very joyous moment for my community, for myself, for my friends. Just having the greatest basketball player ever, you know, coming back playing the game. You know, I needed that inspiration growing up in the inner city. You know, it was like I kind of lost lost a superhero when he retired, someone that I kind of needed to help me, you know, some way, somehow, even though he didn't know it, along with some other athletes and people, but it was incredible. It was so exciting when he said he came, when he was coming back, and, you know, obviously, you know, the basketball world and everybody else that loved him and loved the sport was ecstatic about it as well.
Jordan returning couldn't have happened at a better time. The world of sports was seemingly in flux.
No matter what Bud Selig has ever done or will ever do again, his place in history is secure. He is the acting commissioner who officially canceled the 1994 playoffs and World Series on this, the 34th day of the baseball strike.
In day number 99 of the lockout, a meeting of the Board of Governors, which went for over 7 hours today, at which time they announced they had rejected the last proposal of the Players Association by a vote of 19-7.
The board has, as a result of the meeting, authorized me to make a counterproposal to the NHLPA.
There is a rather amazing story developing in Los Angeles this hour, where California Highway Patrol is in pursuit of a white Ford Bronco, a car that was reported to be one that might contain O.J. Simpson and a friend earlier today. Everybody
assumed. Here's longtime Chicago sportscaster Mark Jean Greco.
The whole country adopts a different attitude. And so, yeah, I mean, I think it was like, oh, yeah, this is great. Now this really is the NBA again. And, you know, he was Michael immediately when he returned. You hear Tim Grover, his trainer, talk about, you know, the first year he came back, you saw his jump shot was different. He wasn't elevating. And, you know, he had just carrying some extra weight because of baseball. That didn't even occur to me. I'm going, he's back, man. He just dominates games. And if you say anything about him, that's his fuel. He never really missed a beat. You know, you could dissect it and say, well, he's not as good as he used to be. Well, guess what? Compared to who he's playing against, he's still dominant.
Here's Jordan's former manager, David Falk, recounting a conversation with then NBA Commissioner David Stern and NBC Sports Chairman Dick Ebersole.
I remember I had a conversation with David Stern, had a conversation with Ebersole. We were trying to understand how to manage this impact, because you say there was, it's like the perfect storm, there was so much going on. I could remember vividly being in Madison Square Garden watching on the telescreen the O.J. chase scene on the freeway. I was at a game that night. That was one of the most surreal things I've ever experienced. But, you know, I think even without all those other factors, I mean, people miss Michael.
Chicago radio host Mark Silverman.
It changed everything. Honestly, like, people may be watching this and think, well, Sylvie, you're speaking in hyperbole again. But again, it changes the way we look at sports today as the greatest of all time. It changed the likability of sports that day. As you mentioned, baseball was stuck in the muck. And you had the strike, and then it wasn't rescued until this great home run chase. And then we find out that the great home run chase of 98 wasn't even real. But what was real was Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen and Tony Kukoc winning 72 games in that first of the three championships after he comes back. And then to finish off a career, at least in a Bulls uniform, in Utah, game six, with the pose, maybe a little bit of a push-off. We won't pay attention to that. But the flex with the shot, I mean, how perfect is that with an exclamation point over what starts with this unbelievable dramatic comeback, and then it ends with one last shot against Brian Russell with a hand extended, putting the exclamation mark on everything.
Here's Jordan's longtime friend and NBA executive Rod Higgins.
Well, I think he transcended just sports in general. It wasn't just the basketball piece, you know. So the track athlete, the bowler, the football player can all identify with the greatness of Michael. And so that's why he was good for sports, because it didn't matter. And then, you know, the grandma, the uncle, they can also, Michael's back, so they're turning on the TV. So he did so much for just sports, not just basketball, but sports in general.
After announcing his return, the Bulls' first game was the very next day on national television against the Indiana Pacers. The atmosphere was unrivaled and unmatched for any regular season game before or after it. The theater of it all was at Shakespearean levels. Jordan's agent, David Falk, was there.
the energy at Market Square was off the charts. And it was like a heavyweight prize fight. It was like being in Vegas watching like Evander Holyfield and, you know, for a regular season game in March. I mean, this isn't like game seven of the Eastern Conference Finals or the NBA Finals. It was really intense.
Here's Mark Silverman again.
Market Square Arena was loud, and it was full of people who hated the Bulls as well, because these are the Reggie Miller Pacers. These are the Pacers that are good enough to probably win a championship if Michael isn't in the way. So you have the effect of Pacer fans hating that Michael is back, but knowing that they're seeing history at the same time. And then you have the tunnel, which is, and this is stuck in my head. I'm jostling to try and get as close to that tunnel as possible to see that first time that Michael and the Bulls are coming out of the tunnel as a different Bulls organization. And it was lined with people and hangers-on and media and news, not just sports media, but news people. And this is the day still where it's not, there aren't as many stations as there are today, and there aren't as many writers in different areas covering the team. But it was lined, and the buzz was, and I've covered three Bulls championships. There's never been a buzz compared to that tunnel of Michael Jordan running out of it for his comeback.
Here's teammate Steve Kerr.
Shoot around was incredible, just the anticipation. Pulling into the hotel, there were hundreds of people outside of our hotel. And the energy in the building when we ran onto the court was incredible. It was before cell phone cameras, and I remember seeing about, 5,000 flashes go off as soon as we ran out onto the court. And as soon as everybody got a glimpse of Michael, must have been 5,000 people with their cameras, flashes going off at the same time. It was almost surreal.
Jordan had space in an adjacent locker room prior to the game. As you can imagine, there was a lot of hype, and Mike just needed to be alone for a couple minutes before the game got started. And only two people joined MJ in it. Longtime Bulls photographer Bill Smith knew the importance of that day and wanted to make sure he captured it.
Well, the scene was amazing. It was like a mega media outing. And I remember that they were very protective of Michael. And when he got there, they put him in a separate locker room from the team. It was bigger than life, and they tried to make it as comfortable for Michael as possible. He was in this, an adjacent locker room. I was dying to get in there, and there was really no cameras in there. They might have let TV in there for a few seconds, I can't remember, but I remember going to Phil, you know, and saying, listen, I understand the magnitude of the whole event today, but on the other hand, it's an historic event. And Phil understood history and, you know, and the importance of it, and I said, can I go in for a few minutes, you know, and he just, you know, and he nodded, so I walked in there, and Michael was leaning against the locker, kind of with his feet up on, you know, on the locker platform there, and he was reading. I said hi to him, and, you know, he nodded, and I just kind of, you know, quietly took some pictures, you know. And every time the camera clicked, I remember it just sounded so loud, and I didn't want to upset him, you know, but I wanted to get some pictures because I knew it was a historic moment.
The other? Longtime NBC reporter and Jordan friend and confidant, Ahmad Rashad.
We probably smoked a cigar just to kind of, you know, bullshit around. It was always about nothing. We're going to sit around talking about all kinds of different things, but never the game. It was never on, what do you think about this, that, and the other. That was kind of, at some point in a couple days before that, we'd already discussed that. So this was, you know, you'd almost be talking about high school stuff or college stuff or just anything. Anything to sort of not talk about what was going to happen at the top of the hour when you had to go out and play, but just other stuff, you know, just other stuff like, hey, my shoes are too tight. Boy, it's been a long time since I wore these shoes. You know, I could get blisters and, you know, just stupid, you know, silly guy stuff. there was never any sort of, oh, it's a big game and, you know, you got to guard so-and-so, and what about this, and that, and the other? Never any of that.
Seeing Michael Jordan on the basketball court, that wasn't different. I mean, just a couple years prior, people still remember the Bulls winning their third consecutive NBA championship. But what was his jersey? With 23 forever hanging in the rafters at the United Center, Jordan made the decision to wear 45 for his return, the same number he wore in high school and with the White Sox during his year-plus tenure in baseball. Longtime Bulls equipment manager John Ligmanowski was there and offers his insight on how that went down.
We had a conversation in the locker room at the Berto Center, and I asked him, I says, well, what number, you wore 45 baseball, what number do you want to wear, you know? And he had sat there and thought for a while, and then he decided, well, 40, he was going to go with the 45. And I says, well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I says, I'll make the 23 up too. So we'll have both. We'll have the 45 and the 20, 23. If you want to change your mind, I got it. So that's kind of what we did. I always carried the 23 around with me in case he decided, which it happened. So.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Back in the summer of 93, when Jordan originally retired, he mentioned that he felt like the league was in good hands.
A lot of people, a lot of times over the last few years, have tried to make me the ambassador of the league, and I've never accepted that role. I think it's a lot of players who must carry that label of the NBA, so that if something like this happens, when a player reaches the point in his career he wants to step away, there's enough entertainment, enough people who are in the spotlight to carry that label. And that's what I think, that's where I think NBA basketball is now. You got a lot of superstars in this league, and with myself stepping away, there's other players to carry that label. So I think basketball is here to stay. And I think you got other rising stars who can carry that label. And I think it will be successful continuously.
But after the game in Indiana, in his very first post game after returning, Jordan made it clear that nobody picked up the torch after he put it down.
You know, quite frankly, I really felt that I wanted to instill some positive things back to the game. You know, there's a lot of negative things that have been happening to the game. And I guess in terms of me coming back, I come back with the notion of, you know, the Magic Johnson and the Larry Birds and the Dr. J's, all those players who paved the road for a lot of young guys. And you know, the young guys are not taking care of their responsibilities in terms of maintaining that love for the game, you know, and not let it waste to where it's so business oriented that, you know, the integrity of the game is going to be at stake. So, you know, I'm back for those guys because I'm able to come back. Some of those guys are not able. If they could, I'm pretty sure they would.
So we asked, was Jordan the only person to carry the torch as the guy in the 90s? Here's former NBA All-Star Glenn Rice again.
I think so. I think he motivated guys who were on that bubble of crossing over to being into greatness. When he came back, it did light a fire because now everybody had that vision once again that, okay, there's the best, he's back. Now let's shoot to try and be as good as him or better. And, you know, Michael Jordan, he never disappointed.
Here's Jordan's former agent, David Falk, again.
Michael had tremendous respect for the people who came before him and paved the way for the opportunity that he enjoyed, you know, in the NBA.
Ahmad Rashad.
I think he was a great example for anyone who wanted to play any sport. It was about winning. It was about dedicating yourself to go through all the trials and tribulation it takes to get to be that winner. The person that it's not about the contract, it's not about this, it's about going out there doing the best you can when it's time for you to go to work. And I think that's where he was at that point. And he did set that example.
Chicago sportscaster Mark Giangreco.
He was the only torchbearer, really. Can you imagine if anybody said load management to Michael Jordan? I mean, it's you play hurt and you play every game, and you play in every venue in every city because there are people that can only afford to go to one game and you're not playing. You know, Joel Embiid crying, you know, Kawhi Leonard, I'm going to sit out 30, 40 games. I mean, no, he was like in your face. Luke Longley said when he came back, immediately the practices were all cranked up, fights, pushing, shoving. Again, they put Pete Myers on him. He's humiliating Pete Myers. But initially, Scotty was guarding him in practice. And Scotty's in midseason form. And, you know, it got Michael riled up. And, you know, he quickly had to lose 15 pounds. He's in the gym. You know, he just wanted to scrimmage to get back. Do you think anybody would do that today? I don't think so. No, he was the only torchbearer, really.
Former NBA All-Star Tim Hardaway.
He was the perfect guy. He was the guy. He was the guy that everybody looked up to across the world. Everybody, you know, you had people patterning their game after his game, walking like him, shooting like him, chewing bubble gum like him. I mean, everything about him, you know, wearing the sleeve or the wristband right here. Wearing a knee brace right where it's supposed to be worn. You know, everything about him, everybody tried to imitate him. And so, yes, he was that guy that was carrying a torch. And I thought, you know, he was right. The game wasn't being respected. A lot of guys was just coming in just, you know, talking and not really being students of the game and not really understanding what they need to do to go out there and prepare themselves for games.
Radio host Mark Silverman.
Michael figuratively passing the torch to himself from the first three-peat to the second three-peat is like so perfect, because here you have this guy saying, you know, we got a bunch of young, cocky, brash guys in this league, whether it's the Penny and Shaq Orlando Magic teams, or, you know, as you mentioned, Allen Iverson coming and then some of the other guys later, Vince Carter and everybody like that. So here's Michael saying, no one's taking it, I'm taking it, and I'm coming back and I'm going to win three championships. But by the time he left again, I don't even know if he really wanted to pass the torch, to tell you the truth, because he came back again and he just couldn't stay out. And I think Michael wanted the torch, wanted the limelight as long as he could hang on to it.
Hall of Famer and dunk contest rival Dominique Wilkins.
I mean, this is what I tell people when they talk about greatest players of all time, or who is great. How many players do you ever know in any sport that can win three championships, retire, play another sport, come back and win three more championships with the same team? Never been done.
And
that's closed the door for me right along.
So he's the greatest of all time?
If you look at what he did, I mean, that's my opinion, yes. And he was a major part of that, and it helped lift other people's game in the league at the time. You know, we went head up for many years, so we kind of helped set the tone for what guys ultimately did that came up behind us. But absolutely, he was a major manufacturer of that.
25 years after Michael Jordan made his triumphant return to the NBA, the league's popularity is at an all-time high. The impact of that decision to come back still resonates with players, media, and fans. Here's NBA superstar LeBron James.
You know, I think Mike was perfect for the NBA in the 90s because of what he represented, the way he played the game, how marketable he was off the floor, you know, stayed clean, great shoes. and he's so inspiring. You wanted to be like him because he was a winner, and then, you know, and you seen the drive in his eyes when he played the game of basketball. So, you know, and you just try to find inspiration from people like that, and live with it.
here's radio host Mark Silverman again.
When we're talking about faxes, what kind of fax would surprise you and would set the dominoes falling that would affect an entire sport and basically an entire sports world? Because if Michael doesn't come back and they win three, and Michael has his career up until that point, he's awesome, but he's not the greatest of all time. We go from being awesome to being the GOAT. And think about everything that happens after that fax.
Former teammate Horace Grant.
I think his stamp will always be on the NBA. When you win six championships, six MVPs, and you don't lose in the finals, your stamp will always be there, and his will.
Here's Mark Giangreco.
The NBA has gone international. I think it's more popular than ever with young people, but I think it would have leveled off had Jordan not come back. You know, I remember in the 70s, I'm old enough to where I remember the 70s, early 70s, the NBA was described as a drug league, a thug league. You know, it was very provincial. It didn't have any national appeal, and Dr. J cleaned it up. Well, then Michael took it to the very next level. I didn't really see anybody being the face of the NBA after Michael. LeBron is the closest thing now. I'm taking my talents to Miami, you know, to South Beach, all that stuff, all that stage stuff. Oh, what's he going to do? Where he's going to go? That's the closest thing to Michael retiring, coming back, you know.
NBA executive and friend Rod Higgins.
Oh, yeah, he's definitely ingrained in the game. You know, you see his logo everywhere. You see that he is represented in, you know, you got Zion, you got Jason Tatum, you got these all-star caliber players, Kemba, who wear his brand. You know, you see at the all-star game, you know, some of the uniforms, or version of them. I think they had all of the Jumpman on them this year, so. I mean, he's everywhere in terms of the NBA game. And now, being an owner, you know, he's an astute, successful businessman, which for me and us, and I'm talking about my family and basketball players in general, that's where the respect, and that's when you pat yourself on the back and you say, oh, yeah, he's one of ours.
Friend and reporter Ahmad Rashad.
I think when you have a player of that stature, everything that he left behind will always have a footprint. It will always have a matter in which way this game is going, and it will always be somewhere to point to that point and say, that was excellence. That really was excellent, and it will always be excellent. And it won't be just Michael. You can go back as far as you want, but one of the biggest contributors to that is Michael Jordan.
Former teammate Tony Kukoc.
It's always going to be an impact. It just changed the whole picture of basketball since the first time he played for the Bulls, but especially when that day when he came back, the salaries changed. The game became global. Now the players, they all have benefits from Michael coming back and then his decision to come back and play. Every young kid in the world right now wants to come to the NBA and play here and then show their talents. You can ask anybody. They might not remember somebody that was good 10 years ago, but they're going to remember Michael Jordan and talk about Michael Jordan.
Former teammate Steve Kerr.
For me, it completely changed the rest of my life because, you know, to that point, I was maybe in my fifth year in the league. Sixth year, I had bounced around. I was just an average player. Playing with Michael Jordan changed the entire course of my career. I was able to play on these championship teams, made a name for myself, was able to get into TV, into broadcasting, into management and coaching. And the reason people hired me for these jobs later on was because I had played next to Michael Jordan and I had been part of championship teams. So for me, it was a dramatic impact on my life at the time and what I was doing at the time, but really on the rest of my career, the rest of my life. So I kind of owe Michael. I owe him everything.
Longtime trainer, Tim Grover.
That's the difference between a legend and an icon. That's the difference. You bring up, there's a lot of legends. There's only a few icons. You know, when you deal in boxing, you can't talk about boxing without talking about Muhammad Ali. Not a legend, an icon. generations to come, all right? You cannot talk about basketball. And it's funny, as time goes by, the legends and stories even get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And I try to tell people, I'm like, oh, that's not true. I said, oh, it's true. I said, you don't believe me? Pull up all that stuff on YouTube. I said, I got a chance to see it firsthand. So when you're an icon, and he is an icon, all right, it's not gonna stop. It's not gonna stop.
This was Sports Uncovered. I'm back.
I hope you enjoyed listening to Sports Uncovered. Go to the Sports Uncovered feed right now to download the rest of Season 1. While you're there, why not click on the subscribe button to get future episodes of Sports Uncovered automatically downloaded to your device for free. Thanks for listening. We will be back next week with a new episode of the Bulls Talk Podcast.